The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Taking some time today to give a big thanks. Seasonality trends show some positive signs. Fed Chair Yellen officially resigns. And Bitcoin stocks to keep on the watch list. All this and much more on episode number 536 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hey there, and a happy Thanksgiving to you, your family, everyone you know, everyone listening, everyone that's going to be listening in the future. Just saying happy Thanksgiving, giving some thanks. We'll talk about that. This is Andrew Horowitz. I'm the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, as well as the founder and president of Horowitz & Company. We're a money management firm. You know that. We have a variety of different strategies for clients that you can participate in if you choose to. We have some that are our core global allocations, which are a diversified approach using a good amount of what we'll call them ETFs / passive investing, as well as a overlay of active management with institutional funds. We also have the investology, which is for those that are looking for a lower entry point into our management process. And we also have, of course, the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth, which is basically a strategy that is both long and short, or can be long and short. We have core equities that we use from a very disciplined screening process that we've used for a while. We refine it here and there, but basically we're looking for really good growth names. We're looking for very strong stocks. We're looking for those companies that have management that are able to really have and provide a high return on equity or ROE, good growth of earnings, good growth of revenue, consistency, and just a lot of other things that go into mix. Probably another 10 different screening criteria. We boil it all down and put that into the portfolio, as well as some alpha generation. All that you can check out over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. If you're thinking maybe markets are a little bit too high right now, maybe you want to think about an alternative strategy that can actually hedge out some of the risk, well, that's the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. One of the things you can check out. A lot of people enjoy it. Go check it out yourself. $50,000 minimum. And yes, we are taking on new clients. So just letting you know that and letting you have that opportunity to check that out whenever you have a chance. Over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. So let me give you a couple of things that I've been thinking about. Some things that are, I think, important talking points and some research and some updates. We'll start with what's going on with the markets. And we did have a holiday shortened week with Thanksgiving on Thursday, where markets were closed, a small few hours open on Friday. But the major indices managed to do some real work. And that's, I think, a bit of the seasonality that we've seen before. There's a lot of optimism that goes into Black Friday and retail sales, and people are feeling good that, well, we're getting into the final part of the year where we're seeing that, maybe we're going to have a continuation of this seasonality with the Santa Claus rally. And there's a lot of good things that people get in tune with. Consumer confidence is high. A lot of good stuff. Well, the markets, again, reacted pretty well. The S&P 500 was up about 1%, 0.95% to be exact. The Dow Jones Industrials followed with a 0.86% increase. The big winner of the week, hoping for something coming up in the next week or two with a vote from the Senate and maybe a passage of a tax bill that will help some of these smaller companies, was the small cap index, up 1.68% for the week, reaching an all-time high. Finally, seeing that the small caps are pulling up as well. Still a little bit lagging, but again, reaching an all-time high. The NASDAQ 100 was one of the big winners also, up 1.5%. And a lot of the names that we've seen that have been moving have been the larger names out there. You know, the Microsofts and the Facebooks and the Amazons and the Googles, all the names that you would think about that have the largest market cap have been attracting significant amount of buyers' interests all year. And again, last week, we saw also, interestingly, that crude oil was up almost 4% and a multi-month high. And this is probably due to the fact that in terms of crude, there's a few things going on there. We've seen that there's a lot of concern over what's happening in the Middle East, the Saudi Arabian asset grab, as I call it, or maybe it's even some kind of ransom type of, I don't know, corporate kidnapping going on. But whatever's happening there, there's concern about that. There's also a continuation of the thought that there'll be OPEC extending their production cuts for some time. And they're just talking about that. Don't forget, we talked about this before, that a lot of what's going on here, I think, has to do with the Aramco IPO, which is basically going to be upwards of a $2 trillion IPO that Saudi Arabia is basically selling out a big chunk of their oil business and the country's overall revenue stream to bring money in because they're hurting so badly due to the fact that oil has been depressed for such a while. And any way they can bring up the price of oil at this point is going to be very beneficial for them. They need to have a significant level of sustainability, of higher prices of oil in order to really make the IPO attractive. And they'll do whatever they can, in my opinion, here. What they're going to do is talk it up. They're going to convince other OPEC nations to possibly continue their discussion or even have further or sustain their production cuts to keep up the price of crude. And on the top of that, you have the U.S. dollar that has been still its downtrend. Broke the recent uptrend. I put a little blurb of that on Twitter last week, where you can follow me at just my name, Andrew Horowitz, over on Twitter. I put a chart up and it shows very clearly the broken uptrend, and then it just rolled over. The U.S. dollar is down 1% for the week. Now, 2017, it's down 9.25%. Which has been helping the price of crude, of course, hasn't been helping other commodities like it used to. Well, not all, but some. Copper's doing well, and some of the other industrial-based commodities are doing well. But silver and gold haven't been at all benefiting from the declining dollar. It's holding, but not doing so great. I think there's a lot of other choices, and we're going to talk about some of them and what investors have been doing as an alternative to assets that are, or that used to be, those that have been seen as the assets that you want to go to in times of trouble, in times of worry, times of concern, when there is a war, or when there is a major national or natural disaster, or when there is a major bankruptcy or upheaval geopolitically. Used to be that people would just shoot over right to gold and silver. There wasn't many alternatives. Well, now they're going to cyber, the cryptos and cyber currencies and bitcoins and Ethereums. And it's a changed environment. And those are gaining significant, not only popularity, but acceptance. And we'll talk about some of the things that are going on there. Now let's get a look at what's going on with regard to economics and what happened last week and what we're going to expect next week. It was, again, a shortened week for economics and very few earnings out last week of any significance. But last week we started to start off with the leading indicators, not a very high impactful release in terms of its reaction in markets and what markets are looking for. Because with leading indicators, you see, well, we know what's going on with most of those that go into the makeup of the leading indicators before it's actually put out. Now, even so, there was a broad-based forecast and consensus of about 0.8-0.9% increase of the leading indicators. We actually came out at 1.2% month over month for October increase. And there was a revision that was actually a higher, which was good. So we were revised from a negative 0.2 to a positive 0.1, and the actual number beat estimates. That's good. But still not a big and a decisively important indicator. Existing home sales, on the other hand, which came out on Tuesday, were in fact something that traders look at. And we saw that the prior was 5.37 million on an annualized basis. And this latest number, which then stripped out all of the concerns about what was going on post-hurricane and what was going to be going on in terms of how many houses would be sold and would buyers step back in as interest rates were theoretically going to be going higher in the future. And maybe we're going to see that there's going to be a lot of people getting off the fence and finally buying houses, even though we're seeing that housing prices have been going higher and higher. We saw the Case-Shiller numbers last month, and we're going to see that next week, showing that housing prices have been ticking higher and continuing on their trend. But we saw a 5.48 million annualized rate of existing home sales, and that was really a good thing because a big part of the economy has to do with homes. New home construction and existing home refurbishings. And a lot of people these days, when they're getting their house ready for sale, are going out and doing a lot of work to make sure the house looks its best. And, you know, way back when, people would be like, okay, my house is for sale. You know, put a sign up, my house is for sale. And then what happened? Well, what happened is that they would basically just allow the realtors to just allow people traipse them in and out and maybe have an open house and tell other realtors about it. And now what's happening is there's a real importance to having a very, what they call, staged look for a house that has an appearance that is sellable immediately, that potentially it's going to be in a way that's very modernized, at least what people are looking for today. And that you're of course having pictures and videos and flybys and drone shots, and you'll have all this going on available on the internet. So people are doing some pre-shopping of their homes on the internet. They're going to see them and they want them to look a certain way. The realtors are providing for that. And sometimes that requires a bit of a refurb. So what's happening there is you're getting both a refurb ahead of the sale, which many years ago you didn't really have. And you're getting a refurb probably after the sale, which was standard procedure. People wanted to change something and move a wall, or they want to, you know, open something up. They want to make sure the roof is done correctly. They want to, you know, update the pipes and the electrical. That happened after the fact. But there's a lot going on before. So the housing market right now is very key, of course, we know this, to a lot of sub-industries that is helping with the jobs numbers, helping with the economy, helping stores like Home Depot and Lowe's and all that. So there's a lot going into why it's so important these days, in particular, for the homes to have a continuation of an upward bias in terms of sales. Then we saw on Wednesday, which was the last full day of trading for the week, we saw that initial claims are coming in right about the 239,000 mark, which is something we've been seeing for a while. Durable goods orders missed the mark pretty significantly. They were actually down 1.2% on the durable goods orders line item, which expectations were for about 0.4 increase. Last report was up 2.2%. Now, if you strip out the transportation numbers and you look at that, well, we saw that there was actually a 0.4 increase in the durable goods. So we took out all the major expenditures on airplanes and transportation-related types of items that obviously saw a tick down for the period. You saw that durable goods orders were actually up. Okay, that's good. You know, it's a busy number. It's a volatile number. Trying even to chart this and make any kind of conclusion from this is not easy. Markets look at this as a semi-important number. Now, we also saw that day the final number of the University of Michigan consumer sentiment, which is still holding pretty high. It's at 98.5, up from 97.8. And usually we see that there is a bias towards a higher reading as they go through their first, second, and third, or first, second, and then final numbers of their sentiment reading. So we do know that consumer sentiment is up. We do know that we are seeing that, generally speaking, there are some good economic trends that have been happening and that have been sustained for some time. Couple of blips here and there, some of them related to things like the various natural occurrences of weather-related issues. But generally speaking, for the whole year, consumer confidence has been high. And that's a product of a lot of things that go into it. A lot of the policies that are going to be hopefully put into place and legislated into law, the tax issues, the better regulatory, or the hopeful better regulatory environment that's going to be happening, as well as more jobs that have been registered. And, you know, obviously the stock market that has been hitting highs also helps in a big way the whole overall sentiment. And then we saw also the FOMC minutes. There is still a significant bias, it looks like, towards a rate hike. What's really interesting about this, though, is that Janet Yellen, yes, she resigned, and that was expected with Jerome Powell being put into office next year as the Fed chair, and that was, this is all expected. However, what's really kind of, I kind of think is a little bit funny, is that Janet Yellen is admitting that while they have been on a quest to increase inflation, to pour liquidity in the markets for a affecting stock markets and other assets to inflate them. We get the wealth effect with the stock market. The hope for would be that they would bring back the housing market. Rates are low, so you know they can, a lot of lending can go on and people can access money very easily. And the whole idea was to keep inflation going and moving upwards towards their 2% goal. And then, of course, their unemployment rate, bring it down. And they had some goals that were in the 5%, then the, you know, a little bit less than 5%. And now we're at 4.1%. So we definitely surpassed that. But somehow they're scratching their head and wondering what is going on with inflation, thinking that just monetary policy alone can battle this major inflationary situation that's happening, or better said, the lack of inflation that should have been there with the first round of quantitative easing. I remember back very clearly when the Fed was going about their first level of quantitative easing, everybody's like, oh man, the amount of money that they are committing to buying bonds and creating money out of nowhere is going to really ramp up and cause runaway inflation. Well, that didn't happen. We know that. Oh, round two. Oh, man. All right, we did it once. Now, maybe it didn't. Maybe it just filled in a big pothole that was out there, a tremendous hole that was created by a meteor that is also known as the financial crisis, you know, back in 2006, 7, 8, 9. Or maybe it was a sinkhole that was there. Whatever it is being filled up. That's what happened with QE1. QE2, on the other hand, that's reckless. That's going to cause just rampant inflation. And what happened? Nothing. Here we are, years later, with $4 trillion plus or minus on the balance sheet of the Fed. In other words, massive amounts of money created out of nowhere. Add to that what's gone on around the world with low or ultra low and almost financial crisis low levels of interest rates and Fed rates around the world, and the quantitative easing, the massive quantitative easing that's gone on in Japan and in Europe, not to mention all of the buying that's going on by central banks and sovereign wealth funds directly into stock markets. We know that the Japanese bank, the Bank of Japan, owns probably 75% of the tradable ETFs on the Japanese markets at this point. I mean, that's just nuts. Will they ever unwind it? I don't know. Probably not at this point. But is that even a free market? It's questionable. But in the end, gentlemen, ladies, of central banks around the world, have you noticed that this has not gotten you towards your inflationary goals of 2%? Have you noticed that there's something else going on here? There's clearly a tremendous amount of benefit towards, we'll call it, technology and price shopping ability and people's current way of buying things that has hampered their entire process of inflation. Now, what I'm all talking about here and what I'm getting at is that even Janet Yellen in her latest statement is wondering, what did they do wrong? They obviously made a big mistake thinking that monetary policy can fix all of this. I find it interesting that she's saying this after she's resigning and she no longer is going to have a position. You often see that, right? When they're going to talk their book while they're there, they're going to have a different take on it, just like Bernanke did after they leave. I'm sure they're sworn to some kind of secrecy and sworn to uphold for the rest of their lives the lines, the way of being of a central banker, not to upset anything, not to upset anybody, not to concern markets, not to throw a monkey wrench into the believability and credibility of the central bank. So you're probably sworn into some kind of secret society. I'm sure of this. I really am. I'm sure that they're sworn into some kind of a secret society pact when they become either chairs or members of the central banks of the world. They have to. Can you imagine if a central banker came out and just discredited the central banks after the fact, saying, you know, while I was there, I said all this stuff. But you know what? It's a bunch of BS. Truth of the matter is, things suck. We just were big cheerleaders the whole time. And our communication policy is nothing more than that. It's just looking to rally up the markets and all that. And why not? It's good for all of us. Can you imagine if somebody said something like that? That's not what they say. So, think about the fact that there's still going to be a tremendous amount of holdback on inflation the way it looks right now. And monetary policies is not going to fix it. But nonetheless, the minutes that came out last week were interesting. Now, what's coming up next week after I get off that whole my chair, my stand on my desk talking about that? What's next? What's coming up next week? Well, we got on Monday in the morning, new home sales that will be coming out. That's also an important number, just like we talked about with existing home sales. We got new home sales coming out. Expectations are for 640,000 on an annualized basis. Still not where we were back in the mid-2000s in terms of new home sales, but there's a lot of optimism. The NAHB came out recently. A lot of optimism on the builders, on what's going on there. And there should probably be, because obviously we're seeing that there is, again, very, very low interest rates, and they're not budging. But there is the idea that the Fed is going to increase rates, so people are trying to kind of get ahead of this. We also have coming out, let's see, on Tuesday, a few things. We have the Case-Shiller Home Price Index and consumer confidence numbers. I always find that day to be an interesting day. It's one of the last days of the month. It's going to be the 28th of November. A lot of times you see window dressing. Somehow, even if markets are down into that Tuesday, they seem to turn around. This is not a science, what I'm telling you right now. But there is somehow a level of desire, it looks like, to paint the tape on that Tuesday into the end of the month, end of the quarter. But we're going to see in the morning also the Case-Shiller Home Price Index. As I mentioned, we're looking for about a 6% increase on a year-over-year basis. That's one of the best numbers we're going to see in a while. So housing prices definitely have been coming up pretty strong. Consumer confidence is going to be expected to be about 125 or so, which is maintaining that high level that we've seen for some time. On Wednesday, we're going to have the second estimate of GDP, looking at approximately an estimate by most analysts coming in about 3.2%. You remember how everybody was really concerned that GDP is going to take a hit due to all of the hurricanes and the fires that we saw a couple months back? And I made the case a few episodes ago that, you know what, in fact, I think that there could be a bounce back in GDP because of that. The short term that we saw that things were offline in a variety of areas of Houston, well, it's still offline in a lot of areas there. In Florida, I got to tell you, I have a house in Lake Placid, Florida, a vacation home, and we have some roof damage there. I called up roofers. I called up 10 roofers in the area. First of all, I'll ask you, guess, how many called me back? 10 roofers I called. How many called me back? One. And the one wasn't even, he can't do you do repairs, he said. He can't do complete roofs, just spot repairs. So I called a few others and I finally got one that came out and he gave an estimate. I said to him, okay, listen, if you get the green light from me right now to fix this roof, when can you start? He said, let me think. About 3 to 4 months. I said, what? 3 to 4 months. And that's not just not that one area. And that area was hit kind of hard. But down in South Florida too, there's plenty of tarps still on houses. And it wasn't even hit that hard down here. But they're overwhelmed. And this is what's going on. The hurricanes and natural disasters definitely do a short-term slowdown in economic activity. But on the back end, there is the potential for a dramatic amount of economic rebound. And I think we may see some of that in the next GDP number. Again, it's the second estimate, not the final. But we're going to go from a 3% that there was the first number now to a 3.2%. Next week, we also have on Wednesday at 2 o'clock, the Fed's Beige Book. And then on Thursday, here's some important numbers. On Thursday, we're going to see the personal income, personal spending numbers. Expectations are pretty much for no change, but what I mean by no change is last month, about a 0.2-0.3% increase. Personal spending last month was a 1% increase from the month before. We're looking at about a 0.4% increase. And the last thing that's important is on Friday. A couple of things on Friday that are important. We're going to see the ISM index come out. This is the manufacturing index. About 30% of our economy is related to manufacturing here in the U.S., looking at about a 57.9, which will be a little bit of a drop from the last, which was at 58.7, but still very much in expansionary mode over the 50 number, the 50 line, which is that demarcation line between contraction and expansion. Construction spending, we're also going to see probably a 0.8 increase approximately. From a 0.3% increase, and a lot of that probably have to do with the new housing, existing housing, as well as all the rebuilding and all the work from the post-hurricane and natural disaster damage. Auto and truck sales will also be coming out as well on Friday in the afternoon. So that wraps it up for that. I want to mention, I hope you had an opportunity to listen to last week's episode. Last week, we had a discussion on private equity. And we don't really talk about that much. As a matter of fact, in all the years, I think this is the first time we had a guest on that was from the private equity world to discuss the ins and outs of private equity. And I think there were some really interesting insights that we had in that episode. And I think the reason why we did it and why I wanted to have somebody on in that arena, because of course we know that, what are we doing here? Why are we listening? What's the whole point of each and every week of doing this? It's a bit of education. And I think that the private equity discussion helped once again provide more of a well-rounded discussion and understanding of markets and market influences. What is actually involved in this whole thing we call the markets? Because while, yes, the bell rings at 9:30 in the morning and it closes at 4 o'clock in the afternoon for the main part of the markets, of course, there are futures and pre-markets and post-markets. But, you know, there's a lot more that really is going on around the edges. And private equity is something. So if you haven't had an opportunity to yet, that was episode number 535 of the Disciplined Investor podcast. Take an opportunity to listen to that. Now, I thought it was also, we passed Thanksgiving. We had that great turducken. I don't know if you had turducken, T-U-R. It's a turkey and a duck and a chicken. Everything's stuffed inside the turkey with stuffing and great stuff. And my family, John, makes that each and every year. And did a great job. This year, I told him, I said, John, this year was your best one ever. It was juicy. It was delicious. I posted a picture of that on Twitter as well. But I thought it would be a good time right now to give some thanks because it is Thanksgiving. It is that time of year. It is that season to be jolly and give thanks. And clearly markets are giving thanks. They give a big thanks for the seasonal bias that surrounds Thanksgiving week. And it's probably, I thought, a good time to, and for me, you could do what you want, but maybe for everybody too, it's a good time to stop and look around and look at all the things that there are to be grateful for. So I thought that, first of all, mention, of course, be thankful for my health and my ability to enjoy the wonders that life has to offer. Thank you to my friends, family, all the listeners, clients, all the podcast guests that have been here for so many years that help us with education and insight and really making this, such a fun thing to do for me and an important thing for me to do each and every week. I got to thank the wonders of technology. Thank technology for the ability to be connected. I mean, without technology, we couldn't do this, right? Couldn't be here just listening to this on your phone or on your computer or downloading it from whatever source you get it from. And I mean, how do we get this all together? The wonder of it all to make it all happen in such a convenient way where whether you're at the gym or whether you're listening to it at night late, in the car, at the office, wherever it is. I mean, pretty cool technology. And I got to be thankful for that. A big shout out for all the fish out there that came on my line, up the water column and onto the table in the last year. And for the fish that are still out there, just going to throw that out there. You know, I like fishing. Big thank you to all, of course, who protect all of us from harm. The police, fire departments, everyone in emergency services, as well as all those in uniform protecting us from foreign and domestic aggressors here in the United States. Those that are serving overseas. Just a big thank you. I'm sure I'm leaving something out here, but you know what I'm getting at here. I just want to mention that and say that and lay that down. I'm very thankful for you. I'm very thankful for you listening, for you being a part of this, for also having a two-way discussion and conversation with me as you send in your various questions and comments. You could do that over on the Disciplined Investor. Thank you so much. Just click on that Ask Andrew button. It really makes my day when you ask me questions and you have a lot to say and your input is critical. No kidding. I'm not kidding about this. Your input is critical when it comes to the show. You've given me some great guest ideas, topics, told me when I'm kind of going offline and saying, why are you talking about this? What does that have to do with anything? And you may be right. I may have a reason why, but okay, I take your advice. You tell me when I should be talking about a particular subject and kind of getting into it. Ask some great questions and hopefully I've helped a lot of people. So let's keep it going. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the Ask Andrew, ask a question. I'll be sure to either get it on the show or answer you directly. If you have an idea for a guest or a topic or something that may be better or worse or change or whatever it is, let me know. Again, this is a conversation. It's a relationship. It's not just two-way, me talking into a microphone and coming up with these ideas. You are a big part of this. Absolutely. So keep it up. Now, at the top of the show, I mentioned we are going to talk a little bit about what's going on with this whole area of Bitcoin-related stocks. Because have you seen what's going on? I mean, you've got to see what's going on. First of all, there's been some great commentary about how the religion of cryptocurrencies is going to make its way into every Thanksgiving Day meal. And you're really going to see a charge up about people going out there and being kind of evangelists of the whole area of crypto and talking with their family and their friends and trying to convince people that, man, you got to get into this. What's interesting is over the last several days, Coinbase saw upwards of 200,000 new accounts opened? So maybe there's some truth in what's going on there, that this whole idea of friends telling friends, oh, you got to get in on this. I mean, there's definitely some things that we have to take pause on in that. We'll talk about that. But there's definitely a craze going on. Bitcoin smashed through the 8,000 mark on the upside, made an all-time new high this weekend. We're seeing that Ethereum is also cranking and doing really well. And there's a lot of buzz about this. We've talked about this, and I'm going to mention this because I don't want to get an email on this or a Twitter tweet about this. Or I'm not an expert about this. I don't claim to be. I don't want to be. But we need to be educated about what's going on here. What I looked at was what not only what's happening with these various currencies, and there is some acceptance and there is some level of, it's here to stay versus what we saw maybe a year ago or 2 years ago about, what's happening? And there's still an entire grouping of people that says this is crap. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's some just junk that we're going to see just crash and burn like what happened in the dot-com bubble. But let's talk a little bit about not only what's happening with Bitcoin, but some of the stocks. There's a few stocks that are seeing a major move to the upside as we're seeing these currencies gain some acceptance. Or if nothing else, the buzz that's going on with relation to cryptocurrencies. That's the broad grouping. And what's happening with stocks that have anything to do with it. And one of the things you want, if you could have a desire to move, if you're a CEO of a company or the founder of a publicly traded company, and you want to know what is it that I can say or do that would move my stock dramatically. There's a lot of things over time. For a while, it was artificial intelligence. You know, there was, the cloud. That was a big one, right? The cloud. All right, those stocks move. But these days, what is it? You could say you're some kind of a Chinese stock and you have some kind of a cryptocurrency side to you. That would do it. I mean, these days, in the last month or so, that would really, really do it. But what a lot of companies have done is they found some companies that have a relationship to or a business side to this crypto world, cryptocurrency world. We talked about in the past a company called Bitcoin Investment Trust. And what this is, it's a listed investment vehicle that gives investors exposure to the price movement of Bitcoin without the necessary storage and buying of Bitcoin and safekeeping. They're supposed to track the price of Bitcoin. Now, we talked about this before that the NAV, the valuation of the trust and the actual value of the amount of Bitcoins they have aren't really adding up. They're getting closer. I mean, the premium on this is getting a lot, it's getting cut down because of the fact that the price of Bitcoin has moved up so dramatically over time, right? There was a time there was about probably 100% premium inside of this. Now, I've seen some major investment players talk about how they'll use this as a proxy because they can't actually get exposure to Bitcoin in their various mutual funds or in their hedge funds because there's no way for them to properly store it under the current way that they have their structure for their investments for their clients. So what they've done is they said, well, the hell with the fact is this really ridiculous premium. We're going to still use this because maybe the premium will stay for a while and we'll use this as a proxy. Symbol GBTC. And by the way, I'll put all the symbols that we talk about here of the stocks over on the show notes for episode number 536. So you can go over to the disciplinedinvestor.com and you can check that out. The next one, and again, there's no particular order of these, is Riot Blockchain Inc., symbol RIOT. By the way, I also encourage you to check out the recent moves in particular on the charts on some of these. Just pull up a daily chart on some of these. Now, this is a company that's listed on the NASDAQ that has exposure to cryptocurrencies through targeted investment in the sector, primarily Bitcoin and Ethereum blockchains. The company has made strategic investments in exchanges such as Coinsquare.io, TestPay.io, and Verity.com. The company is also involved in Bitcoin mining. So this is a company that owns some of the, we'll say, wallet/crypto sites as also doing some mining. That's not kind of ramped up pretty well. Kind of, these stocks were interesting because they were holding for a while and they went up, they went down, they kind of jammed up, they came down. And then all of a sudden, the last week or so, they've been just off to the races. Another company, and a lot of these, by the way, are thinly traded. So they have the ability to move very quickly. All right, the next one on the list is a company called Social Reality. The symbol is SRAX. And this is an internet advertising and technology company. The company recently announced that it has a plan to offer an ICO, also known as an initial coin offering, to sell Big Token, a digital currency customers can earn for sharing data. So basically what they're going to do is, I guess, something like have ads out there. And if you share them, you'll get a credit. You'll get a credit in their ICO. And so there's a lot of interesting thoughts about how that works. You could basically share in the revenue. It's like an affiliate deal in a way, but it's going to pay you in coins. So there's some excitement about that. The next one, I can't really pronounce it. Symbol XNET. This one's been very interesting. This one has been on fire. I think it's pronounced Zunli. I probably butchered that. So this is a cloud-based acceleration technology company that recently launched the OneCloud Project, a content delivery network with its own digital currency, the blockchain of OneCloud Coin, which is meant to be distributed to device holders depending on their contribution to the network. That was launched October 12th. But again, this is a company that has seen a parabolic move in its share price. The next one is Overstock.com. And they recently had a tie-up with Coinbase, which is an exchange for currencies. We know that. And it's supposedly the first retailer to accept digital currency. I'm not buying that. There's other. I mean, we know Tesla for years was accepting some Bitcoin and several other companies. So I'm not sure this is the first retailer. I think it's a lot of fluff here, by the way. A lot of fluff. The company allows purchases of Overstock.com products using Bitcoins. But that's good. That's great. And supposedly, by the way, this company holds a lot of the Bitcoins that they bring in. I saw a recent report just last week on Bloomberg. I was like, oh, how much is that? I'm kind of interested because we're actually short these shares because I thought that the last earnings report was pretty not so special. And while I know there's been a big move on the stock because of all the stuff that's going on with what we're talking about now, I thought, man, this stock is due for a correction. I've been wrong, by the way. But what's interesting is they talked about how much they own in actual Bitcoin. So they had a 400,000K number there. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that's interesting. I didn't realize it was that much. 400,000 Bitcoins, that's a lot of dough. Now, let me also back this up by saying one other thing, that Overstock also is looking to come out with their own ICO. I think they're trying to raise about $500 million. Now, that would be pretty cool for the company because they bring in a lot of money for the ICO and they could ride it around and take some money off it. It's kind of like a secondary offering without the secondary offering. Just out of nowhere, they make this coin up and they just get money from it. I don't know how that's going to work. A lot of the ICOs of late have not done well. Yeah, they've seen a lot of movement out of the gate and then they just fall down. You look at Neo, Monero, you could look at Ripple. You just look at all of these have really not done well. Bitcoin has done much, much better. But nonetheless, okay, Overstock. The reality was it wasn't 400,000 Bitcoins, it was $400,000. I checked that a couple of different times. Unless I'm seeing something wrong here, very unimpressive. It's only 400,000. So there's a lot of this hype being attached to this, okay? Now, the last one on this list is probably of others that I'm not talking about here, but MGT Capital Investments. Now, this focuses on acquiring and developing a portfolio of cybersecurity technologies. Okay, we know that. One of the principals is John McAfee. There you go, check that dude out. Kind of interesting fellow. He's the guy that said that if Bitcoin doesn't reach $50,000 per coin in what year did he say? 2020, was it maybe? That he would, let's just say, do some very unsavory acts to himself sexually on YouTube or on the internet or on video. Anyway, the other thing they do, they also engage in Bitcoin mining operations. So they put together a string of computers in a warehouse somewhere, and they are just mining for Bitcoin. Another that was up, I don't know, like 30 or 40% on Friday. On a, all these companies got, you know, really moved up pretty well on Friday, some in a big way. Now, looking at the charts on these, I mean, I got to be honest with you, it's very reminiscent of the dot-com craze back in the early 2000s. I mean, there's no question about that. We're seeing some parabolic moves on these because of all the hype, and a lot of this is really questionable. Now, if you'd like to play these for the momentum move, that's great. We know that there was a bid back in 2000s and there was a buying panic under many of the names that had no earnings or maybe just a, you know, they had the word internet or .com in their name. And we also know that fast forward a number of years that only a few of these companies actually made it as ongoing going concerns after the crash. And I'll be honest, it won't be a surprise to me if some of these companies that I just mentioned and some of the other ones that are trying to associate themselves with cryptocurrencies won't crash and burn as well, as basically their businesses, you know, are related to cryptos. That's great. And it's seen as a proxy right now. Fine. But we may not actually have the underlying business that will have a long-term survivability. So what should you be watching for? What I'd be watching for, and we may have seen this just recently, but what I'd be continue watching for on the charts is what I would call an exhaustion gap higher. Just a major gap of these names higher. And then a turn down that same day, or maybe a day after, down lower. If it turns down the same day, it's even more powerful to the downside. So you see an exhaustion gap up, gap off the open, a gap opening price, maybe running higher throughout the day, and all of a sudden a stop and a turn. Coming back to reality when we see some reasonable senses and sensibility of fundamentals starting to put back into the reality here. Of course, these things will also be following Bitcoin prices. So if we see prices continuing to move up, you may see some continuation of this trend. So that needs to be added as an overlay in your analysis of this. And many of these are very thinly traded. They move very quickly as many of the momentum names get in there and they kind of, and the algos get in there and they just looking for that price move and price up above a certain level, crossing an all-time high, getting into a gap zone, reclaiming that gap. But once the music stops, things can get pretty ugly for these names. And we've seen this over time. You know, look at some names like, for example, the companies in the dry shipping. I mean, you see multiple days of just incredible returns. And then what happens? They flop when reality smacks them back in the face. Look at a chart, for example, of another company that was very hot for some time. We saw that artificial intelligence, the whole AI concept, was really hot for a few months. A company called Veritone, V-E-R-I. And stock was riding high on the whole idea that, you know, they had some kind of AI products and abilities and the business structure and what was going to, you know, take the world over by storm. The whole idea that we're going to have this instantaneous AI could be related to autonomous driving. It could be related to computer technology. It could be related to bots. So investors piled in. On September 27, look at a daily chart. On September 27th, after a big run-up for many days, what happened? The stock got higher. Now, looking back, it was clearly an exhaustion gap higher. It turned down that same day and closed well below. It took out a lot of very important support points on the way down that same day. Now, that exhaustion high may have blown out the remaining shorts that were out there and even pulled in those that were looking to get in on the continuation of that vertical ascent, that parabolic move that we saw. And then it turned lower and it's been in a downtrend ever since. From a high of $75 back on September 27th, that high, look where it is now, about 22 and a half. So I'd be watching some of these stocks for that same kind of move. Now, again, if you want to day trade this, swing trade this, and just be careful with these names. Again, I'll put the list of names of the stocks we talked about on the show notes for this episode. What else do we have to talk about? Oh, yeah, we got to talk about retail, don't we? It was an interesting week for retail. Now, you would expect that to be the case as seasonality starts to, you know, really get strong around the Thanksgiving mark here, around the Black Friday and Cyber Monday, and, you know, the shopping season is about to begin. I mean, these days it looks like shopping happens whenever it happens. I mean, people don't necessarily wait for all the doorbusters. Remember all the media coverage? You used to see people plowing down doors and marching over each other and getting into fist fights over, you know, Tickle Me Elmo. Remember those days? Okay. Well, it's not really so much anymore. You don't see a lot of that anymore. However, it was a nice week for retail stocks. Seems that every year around this time, we get that same kind of move. Get that excitement generated about Black Friday sales tracking well above expectations. And it's going to be a great year for retail and the big bucks and all that. And then everybody just kind of comes to reality a few days later. But what do we have going for us now? What do we have going for us in the area of retail that could possibly show some benefit for some of these companies that have been massive laggards? Well, we have consumer confidence that's way up. We know that. We talked about that a little while ago. We see wages are definitely ticking higher, along with the fact that unemployment is at decade lows. And we also have the fact that there is a very, capital V, very low bar for success right now. Everybody believes the retail, you know, the malls, the big box retail is dead. But retailers are still kind of upbeat. Now, again, those old crowds aren't there looking for doorbusters. And I think retailers have gotten the notion that, you know what, we don't have to discount as much anymore right in this time of year. So that could be a benefit for profitability, for margins. It's been very clear that, you know, people can get those deals pretty much all year round online. So they don't need to put that on the one-day deal. It doesn't make any sense. So if we do have less discounting that goes on, it could be a better thing for many of these companies. Now, this is of interest. This is a recent study that was done on Black Friday. Adobe put this out. They said that online spending was a record $5.03 billion on Black Friday, up 16.9% over the last year. And much of that shopping is now occurring on phones, with mobile devices accounting for about 54% of all visits. Now, Adobe also expects that Cyber Monday is going to be the biggest online shopping day in history, with $6.6 billion in predicted sales, which is another 16.5% increase over 2016. That's pretty impressive. I find that pretty impressive. Now, let's look at some of the names of the stocks that are making a big comeback recently. I mean, a lot of these stocks were left for dead. Macy's recently went from $21 after their announcement of store closings and their concern about their sales for the year, their recent earnings report. They went from a low of $17.41 up to $21. That's a nice move recently. In the last couple of weeks, Kohl's gone from $28 to $45. JCPenney, $2.35 to $3.26. Sears still seeing problems, not doing much there. Still close to the lows, actually. Dillard, same thing. For whatever reason, Dillard's not getting any respect, not moving off its base. Dick's Sporting Goods, up from 24 in the last few weeks, up to 27.85. Under Armour, 11.75. Not much more could have gone down, it seems, after just been bludgeoned this year, up to 12.99. Walmart, been pacing really well all year long after that Jet acquisition really helped them in the online space, from 89 to an all-time high, 96. Target, still close to its post-earnings lows. Home Depot, all-time highs. Lowe's is lagging a bit. Amazon at all-time highs. The behemoth in the sector, obviously. The one that's taking all the business, it seems, from everybody else. So there's a lot going on in the retail area. I'd keep a watch on that. Very interesting. I think that, again, there's a very, very low bar for success here set by investors right now in terms of what's going on during the holiday season, particularly for any of the major retailers, because they've been just so gutted over the last several years. So make sure to keep an eye on those. I think that's something to really watch. If we do see there is an uptick in spending, I don't think we're going to see any major uptick compared to years past in the brick and mortar space. And there's probably going to be some more stores closing and conversations. You're going to hear about that throughout the next several months, or at least past the holiday season. Once they get all the numbers in, and we're going to find out really how much discounting went on and how much You know, how much sales really happened versus anything online. But I don't know about you. It's just so much easier to do price comparison shopping on a phone, on a computer. And if you want to buy something from one of these places, why bother going to the store anyway? Just figure out that they didn't have what you wanted in stock anyway. So it's easier to deal all of this on with online. We knew this for years though. So, but a good time of year to talk about this, you know, during Thanksgiving. So we talked about what we're thankful for. Hopefully you have a lot to be thankful for as well. Talked about this whole area of cryptocurrency and the economics that we saw from last week and what's coming up next week. So I think we had a pretty good discussion today. We're going to end it about here. Make sure to go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, please, and put yourself on a list of mailing lists to get any of the information we have. Check out our important offering of Investology. You really like it. I think we have like two coins left. So if you want a challenge coin and a signed, personally signed book, The Disciplined Investor, make sure to open up an account over on Investology. All you have to do is deposit $10,000 and we'll manage the money from there. I mean, it's pretty low entry requirements. So if you're thinking about that, and of course, all the other things we talked about in terms of the strategies, they're here for you. I want to make sure you take advantage of them. It's a good time of year to reflect on what's going on, what the future holds, and maybe looking at some alternative opportunities for your portfolio. Other than that, I thank you so much, and I'll see you again Tuesday night with John C. Dvorak live at 9 p.m. for DH Unplugged. Thanks again. Have a great Thanksgiving weekend. I'll see you next week.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.